Today on Uncommon Stories, we'll find out where one of our favorite foods that we eat while watching movies, sports, out shopping, at parties, at sporting events, and on the weekend with our families comes from. Pizza! And we'll see how pepperoni became the favorite topping of choice when we order a pizza or make it from scratch at home. You can order pizza from a number of chain and local pizza restaurants. You can buy frozen and fresh-made pizzas at the store. And you can make your own pizza right at home. And of course, you can have tossed, thin crust, thick crust, rising crust. You can even have cheese in your crust. Then, you can choose your toppings, which are most anything you can dream up. Now, it's pretty obvious pepperoni is the number one pizza topping of choice. But can you name the other four in the top five pizza toppings of choice? Think about it, and we'll see if you're right at the end of our story. The word pizza is defined as small cake or wafer in a 1598 Italian-English dictionary. Its origins, although not clear, seem to have started with either the Greek word pita, meaning bran bread, or with an ancient German language word, once spoken in northern Italy, biso, meaning bite. Wherever it was derived from, the word pizza was first recorded in English in early 1800s and was borrowed from the Italians. As you might expect, the pizza we are more familiar with today did originate in Italy. But before becoming a staple of Italian cuisine, its predecessors were enjoyed in cultures throughout ancient history. Archaeologists have found baked bread dating over 7,000 years ago, and records have shown that people would add ingredients to the bread. In the 6th century BC, Persian soldiers serving under Darius the Great would bake flatbreads with cheese and dates on top of their battle shields. In ancient Greece, people would bake flatbreads called plakos, flavored with herbs, onion, cheese, and garlic. And the epic poem, The Aeneid, from 19 BC, tells the story of Aeneas, a Trojan, and his men who traveled to Italy. On their way, they were fed pizza-like food, which were round cakes, like pita bread, topped with cooked vegetables. Other examples of early pizza-like meals come from the pizzarelli, which were kosher cookies eaten at Passover by Roman Jews. Also, some 2,000 years ago, Roman soldiers would add cheese and olive oil to matzah. And there are flatbreads that survive to this day from the ancient Mediterranean world known as focaccia. And there were many other flatbreads from all over the world. In China, there was bing, a wheat flour-based flatbread. In India, they ate paratha. Central and South Asia had naan and roti. The Sardinian ate karasso, as well as others. And in Finland, they ate riska. So it is clear there were many flatbreads, and flatbreads with added ingredients and toppings recorded throughout the world in ancient times. But how and where did pizza evolve into the amazingly popular food we enjoy? In the 16th century in Naples, Italy, a Gillette flatbread was referred to as pizza. However, it was not a main dish for everyone. It was sold to and eaten by the poor, and it remained this way until the 18th century. The story goes that under the Bourbon kings, Naples became one of the largest cities in Europe due to overseas trade. The city grew with businesses that supported the shipping and trade industries, and the population almost doubled from 200,000 in 1700 to 399,000 in 1748. And with more opportunities in a growing city, many peasants from the countryside began to make Naples their home. Unfortunately, the economic growth was not able to keep pace with the influx of people, so many fell into poverty. The poorest of the poor were known as Lazzaroni, as their unkempt appearance was similar to that of Lazarus. With roughly 50,000 Lazzaroni scraping by as porters, messengers, and laborers, they sought cheap and easy ways to eat. The pizza flatbread, popular with the poor in the 16th century, helped them meet this need. Adding cheap toppings such as garlic, lard, salt, cheese, basil, and vegetables gave them a quick and easy meal as they looked for work throughout the day. But as you might guess, those that could afford more expensive meals saw the pizza as a food for the poor, and not something they would ever try. Something that added to the disdain was the addition of tomatoes as a topping, not long after pizza became popular with the lazzaroni. Tomatoes, imported and introduced to Italy in the 18th century, were not a hit. Many people believed them to be poisonous, like other fruits similar to tomatoes. But the lazzaroni needed cheap meals any way they could get them. So they added the imported fruit to their pizzas. They also began to add fish to add more protein to their meals. And even though the lazzaroni gradually improved their status and even opened up the first pizza restaurant, pizzas were sold on the street for the most part, pizza was still looked down upon by most Neapolitans. All of this changed after Italian unification, and a visit to Naples by King Umberto I and Queen Margherita de Savoy. Although not confirmed, it is believed the royal couple were tired of their French dishes and looked to add some diversity to their personal menu. The chef Rafael Esposito was asked to prepare some local specialties for the queen. Knowing most Italian cuisine was fairly common throughout Italy, he chose a dish that he knew was strictly offered in Naples, the pizza. He cooked three kinds, one with lard, cheese made from horse milk, and basil, one with whitebait, anchovies and sardines, and one with tomatoes, mozzarella, and basil. The queen was very impressed. Her favorite was the tomato, mozzarella, and basil pizza, as it had the three colors of the newly created Italian flag. That pizza was named the Pizza Margherita in her honor. With the king and queen's approval, the pizza became a hit with everyone in Naples. Of course, it's also possible that as the lazzaroni became more stable and led more normal working lives as others in the city, their pizza, with more types and new toppings, were incorporated in the diets of all of the citizens. Whichever version is true, the pizza was still slow to make a name for itself in other parts of Italy. And it wasn't until the 1930s when Neapolitans moved northward to find work, taking their pizza cuisine with them, that it gained popularity in other parts of the country. Although there is some doubt to the truth of the story of the King and Queen's visit, the Margherita pizza is widely attributed to baker Rafael Esposito. He worked in the Pietro e Basto Così, translated to Pietro and That's Enough restaurant. This restaurant was established in 1880 and is still in business as Pizzeria Brandi. The pizza evolved into a bread and tomato dish served with cheese. Interestingly enough, the meal was sweet, not savory. So it was very different to what we know as pizza. Early versions of a dish similar to pizza that were savory resembled scaccia, or stuffed bread, close to what we eat today, the calzone. But the pizza in Naples continued to grow in popularity, and the Pizza Margherita created by Rafael Esposito became the most popular pizza in the city. And over the years, the pizza became the pride of Naples. So much so that in 1984, the Associazione Varese Pizza Napoletana, or True Neapolitan Pizza Association, was created. And they developed strict guidelines for making authentic Neapolitan pizza margherita. These included that the pizza must be baked in a wood-fired domed oven. The base must be hand-kneaded and never rolled with a pin or prepared by a mechanical device. And it must not exceed 35 centimeters in diameter or be more than one-third of a centimeter thick in the center. The association works with pizzerias around the world to produce and spread the Varese Pizza Napoletana philosophy and method. Many of the oldest pizzerias in Naples go a step further with the guidelines, using only San Marzano tomatoes, a variety of plum tomato grown on the slopes of Mount Vesuvius. And adding olive oil and tomatoes can only be done in a clockwise direction. Now that's being serious about your pizza. Maybe your family could try to make its own version of a pizza margherita based on the guidelines. I bet you'll make an excellent pizza. Well, being established in Italy, the pizza makes its move across the ocean. and immigrants from Naples in the late 19th century bring the delicious meal and introduce it to America and Canada. At first, Italian-American families made pizza for family and friends, and it stayed within the Italian communities for several years. But in 1904, the first printed reference to pizza was written in the Boston Journal. Giovanni and Gennaro Bruno came to America from Naples in 1903 and introduced Neapolitan pizza to Boston. Later on, Vincent Bruno, Giovanni's son, moved to Chicago and opened the first pizzeria in that city. But more on that later. In New York, Gennaro Lombardi opened a grocery store in 1887 and sold pizza to its customers. This is generally accepted as the first U.S. business to sell pizza. Later on, in 1905, Lombardi opened a pizzeria restaurant, Lombardi's. Italian communities packed the establishment. From here, pizza moved to New Jersey with Joe's Tomato Pies, opening in 1910, and to Connecticut with Frank Pepe Pizzeria Napoletana in 1925. But surprisingly, the Italian fare did not become popular with the mainstream until the 1940s. That's when veterans of World War II returned home. And those who served in Italy and tried pizza began to look for it in the U.S. And finally, pizza finds a whole new market. As mentioned before, Vincent Bruno moved from New York to Chicago. Not too long after the U.S. entered World War II, a man from Texas also moved to Chicago and opened a pizzeria, Ike Sewell. To attract new customers to his restaurant, he created a much heartier pizza by offering a deeper, thicker crust and richer, chunkier toppings, with cheese on the bottom and thick meats, veggies, and tomatoes on top. Around the same time, the Rocky Mountain Pie was introduced in Colorado. Although similar to the Chicago version, it had a wider crust that pizza lovers ate with honey as a dessert. And then later on, the Hawaiian pizza with ham and pineapple was created, as well as the California pizza, which is a throwback to the traditional Italian pizza. And in Canada, they pride themselves on the, not surprisingly, Canadian pizza, which offers tomato sauce, mozzarella cheese, pepperoni, mushrooms, and bacon. The bacon, however, is not traditional Canadian bacon. It is the cheaper, crispier side bacon. The Canadian pizza sounds very similar to the pizzas we make and consume today. And this is a story all to itself. Pizza restaurants and making homemade pizzas were very popular after the mid-1940s. But as technology improved, so did the means to sell pizza. And it is here where pizza evolved once again. Refrigerators and freezers began to hit the market, and everyone wanted them. And pizza makers found a new way to sell their favorite dish, frozen pizzas. But how do they get their toppings to stay on the frozen pie? You see, up until now, most toppings were added after the pie was baked. But they couldn't find a convenient, cost-effective way to do that with frozen pizzas. So, like the Canadian pizza, frozen pizzas had tomato sauce on top of the pie, and tomatoes were left off. Then they added the cheese and other toppings. Once these were baked with the bread, the ingredients would stay on the pie to be frozen. And thus, pizzerias began to make their fresh pizzas the same way. And pizzas that we have come to know and love were born. And then, of course, the pizza restaurant chains we know today sprang up. Shakey's Pizza, founded in 1954, Pizza Hut in 1958, Little Caesars in 1959. But the more interesting chain to come about started in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Just as refrigerators and freezers became more popular, so did cars and motorcycles. And once people had those, pizzas could be delivered fast and efficiently. So started the pizza delivery business. And in 1960, Tom and James Monaghan founded Dominique's, and they used pizza delivery to their advantage. Soon, they gained a reputation for speedy delivery and remarketed their company and took it nationwide as Domino's. And today, Domino's is the leader in pizza sales, just edging out Pizza Hut. And on any given day, 13% of the population, or 40 million people in the U.S., eat pizza. I wonder what that number would be worldwide. From the beautiful city of Naples, Italy, to North America and beyond, the pizza has taken quite a trip. And pizza lovers are so glad it did. Maybe for the next family trip, you visit New York, Chicago, or California and eat at one of the first pizzerias established in the U.S. If you're a little more daring, head to Naples and eat at one of the first pizzerias ever established. It might not be the pizza you're used to, but you will undoubtedly be eating a little bit of history. Well, we have our pizza, our pizzerias, our frozen pizza, and our pizza delivery. But what about what goes on our pizza? There are many pizza toppings to choose from, but the favorite topping is pepperoni. But why? And how did that happen? Modern pizza was created in Naples, but our favorite topping, pepperoni, is all American. Since the end of the 19th century, people made sausage by combining one or more meats, beef, pork, and veal, with different spices. Pepperoni, which is a type of salami, is typically made with beef and pork, spices, and peppers, which is why it's called pepperoni. Many of these meats were used as appetizers or side dishes along with pizza, and it was this way for many years. It wasn't until the 1930s that sausage, bacon, and other types of salami were added as toppings to pizza. And this came about as customers would add the meat side dishes to the top of the pizza that they ordered. Restaurant owners saw what their customers were doing and started to add the meats as toppings before giving it to their customers. And thus, new toppings started popping up on pizzas. But it wasn't until 1950 that pepperoni, similar to today's, was added to pizza. Most sausages are hung after they are made and hang for months before they are ready. But pepperoni only needs to hang for 1 to 3 weeks before it is ready. So it is a simpler, more cost-effective topping for pizza. However, it wasn't a favorite topping yet. One of the largest sausage producers in the U.S. is Izzo Sausage. But when the company opened in the late 70s, pepperoni still wasn't popular, and they produced sausage for pizza. It was similar to pepperoni, but it didn't get crispy when baked. Izzo started to experiment, and in the early 80s came up with pepperoni in the style we know today. Ground pork and beef and spices with peppers, fermented and dried. They began to sell it pre-sliced, specifically to add to pizza. Pepperoni pizza had a small following at first, but when the chain restaurants began to expand throughout the country, they found that pepperoni was a cheap way to add more flavor to their cheese pizzas. And the pepperoni pizza craze was on. Customers loved the crisp, spicy pepperoni added to the soft cheese. And obviously, they still do today. Even though other styles of pepperoni have been tried, pizza restaurants have found people prefer the original. Domino's estimated that pepperoni was only on 30% of the pizzas they sold 35 years ago. But today, it is on 50% of the pizzas ordered. That's a serious jump. And it goes to show how pizza lovers not only love their pizzas, but they also love their pepperoni on top of it. So, have you thought about the other four toppings behind pepperoni in the top five favorite pizza toppings? Number five is onions. Number four is similar to pepperoni, sausage. Number three might trick you. It's extra cheese. And the number two favorite topping behind pepperoni is mushrooms. After all this pizza and topping talk, maybe you're ready to go get the ingredients to make your favorite pizza. I know I am. Well, there we have it. I hope you've enjoyed this edition of Uncommon Stories. And come back next time to listen to more interesting, surprising, thought-provoking, and entertaining stories that are true, but probably are just uncommon. I'm Brad Greer for Uncommon Stories, wishing everyone a wonderful week. And thanks for listening.